Okay, good morning. So let's see, we've been just gotten started with Riemann integrals, and I want to do some more with that today. So the goal today will be to just practice a little with them, but also to show we have a large collection of functions that are, in fact, Riemann integrable. So let me just indicate the theorem that we'll be heading for, and we'll prove later today. So that's 11.28, which says that the continuous functions, at least, are integrable. Now, we've already seen some that were integrable that were not continuous, so there are some others, but at least these are. So the continuous functions, and let me just write it on 0, 1, it works on an interval, of course, is a collection of Riemann integrable functions. R int is the way that we were writing that. So this this says that every continuous function on 0, 1 on this compact set is Riemann integrable. All right. And there's a couple of comments about that. So one is that this is a step toward a claim that we've made earlier, but still have yet to prove. Which is that the continuous functions are at least derivatives. So C0 of 0, 1 are at least derivatives. So this is something that's been asserted, but we have yet to prove it. So just reminding you of that. And then another thing that this will give us, or at least something to think about, is the following theorem, which is, so we're always looking for classes of functions where we have a good limits, and those are characterized by being Banach spaces, and we don't quite get one, but we get something close. And so if we take the a norm to be, let me call it R1, to be the integral of the absolute value of my function. Okay, then if I look at the continuous functions with this concept of a norm, this L1 norm as it's written there with that subscript, then this is a norm linear space. All right, but it's not quite what we're looking for. It's a good step in the right direction, but it's not Banach. Okay, and you can try to think about sequences of functions that would show that it's not Banach. So that would be Cauchy, but not convergent in that norm. Anyway, we'll come back to that next week. Okay, so that's kind of the direction that we're headed. And to prove the 11.28, which we're planning to do today, we will use the Cauchy criteria. And so let me note what those are and then just do a few, I'll let you guys actually work out a few examples. So Cauchy criteria for the proof of 11.28. And actually, they're useful for various other things. So it's just a handy collection of criteria. All right, so these are just different ways to characterize the Riemann integrable functions. And so let me just start with the definition, and then I'll give two others. So I'll give three equivalent ways of characterizing these Riemann integrable functions. So first of all, the Riemann integrable functions were defined. Let me just work on 0, 1. It works on any interval. Were defined to be, of course, the set of bounded functions for which the upper and lower approximations were the same. So U of F is equal to L of F. All right, so that was the definition. And remember that this U and L also, let me do that in a different color because this is not really part of the definition, just a reminder This is also equal to the integral upper bar from 0 to 1 fx dx. And this one we gave also the name integral lower bar, just names fx dx. Okay, so those were the names that we had. All right, so that was the definition. But now the Cauchy criteria are two different ways of rephrasing this. And this one is theorem 11.23 and the other is 11.26. And this says that it's the same as taking all the functions which are bounded on 0, 1, just like above. Okay, but now our criterion is that it has to do with partitions. So it's longer to write, but easier to work with. So for every epsilon greater than 0, there exists, so it looks sort of like a continuous sort of statement. So there exists some partition P on 0, 1, so some way of breaking up 0, 1 into pieces with, okay, well, we're trying to get the U and the L to be equal, and so this says at least they're close. So the U of F using this partition minus the L of F with that same partition is small. And small here is going to be less than epsilon, okay? So that's the Cauchy criterion, at least one version of it. It's another way to write it. 11.26, this comes as, again, a set of bounded functions, same as above, okay? But now what we want is instead of saying for each epsilon, I give you a partition, I'm giving you a sequence of partitions that work well. So sometimes one's easier to write out, sometimes the other, they're pretty similar, but let me just write it out. So there exists this sequence of partitions, let me call them Q sub n, n is a natural number, so that makes it a sequence, and they're partitions. So Q sub n is one of these partitions of 0, 1, some way of chopping 0, 1 up into pieces, okay? With, and then we want something similar, but now instead of having an epsilon, we just write that the limit as n goes to infinity of this difference is going to 0. So the limit as n goes to infinity of the difference, just like above, the u at qn minus the l at qn, is equal to 0. Okay, so those are two other ways to characterize these functions, which will be handy for our proof. Okay, and so let's just play around with these with some examples. For this Cauchy criterion, and I just want to work on the same interval, 0, 1. Which is what I'll be working with today. And then I want to use the evenly divided partitions, as are often the most convenient to work with. So let me call that and write, so R sub M, so this will be some partition and it'll be an explicit one, but just to remind you what the notation means, this is in there. And remember what a partition is, so something in there, it's gonna be a collection of numbers, finite, the between 0 and 1. So it's gonna be 0, and then the next one is gonna be 1 over m, et cetera, 2 over m. So they're all evenly spaced, and there are m intervals. Okay, so that's what I mean by R sub m. So that's one of the, that's that partition. Okay. And now if we're gonna study this Cauchy criterion here, we're interested in what the difference between the U and the L is, okay? And so recall, so if we just recall the formulae, U of some function with regard to the partition RM, for example, is gonna be the sum I runs from, well, we're running over all the intervals, right? And then it's going to be the length of the ith interval. And then it's going to be the sup of x in this ith interval of f of x. And in this case, what is that length? I hope it's clear, but just to make sure that the notation is clear, this is supposed to be the length of the interval. So what is that in this case?
1/m.
Correct, right? So does everyone see that? So the intervals are just these intervals here between the numbers that are in my partition, right? And so they all have the same width. And so that width is 1/m in this case. So this L, I are all the same and they're all 1/m, okay? So that's okay. And L is of course similar with instead of soup. All right, and so what we're interested in computing is the difference between these. So I want to find u of f with this specific partition Rm minus L of f with that same partition. And I'm going to give you a bunch of functions and give you a little bit of time in the record to just compute those. So let me start with the one that we already did. So I'll just tell you what that one is, and then you can do the others. So one will be f of x equals x, which we already did. And so the function is this function. That's what the graph looks like. And if I chop it up into even intervals, then I'm going to get two things. I'm going to have this upper one, and then I'm going to have the lower one. And the difference between those is going to be, they should all be squares, is going to be this area, right? So that's going to be the L minus, sorry, U minus L. So f of x. So then U of f, I mean, it's f, using this M piece partition minus L of f. Actually, let me just use the three piece, why not just the three? So if I use the one that's drawn over there, so the three piece partition, and then subtract L with the three-piece partition. Is it, do people remember or can they see what that difference is? So since that's supposed to be a line of slope one, those three objects are going to be squares, right?
So they would just be 1/m?
Yep. And since m is 3, this is the 1/3, right? So this is, there are three of them and they're each 1/9. 1/9, 1/9, 1/9. And so they add up and we get that 1/3. Okay. And as you said, in general, it's going to be 1/m for this case. So u of f with Rm minus L of f with Rm is equal to 1/m, right? And the way that we'll get that is it's going to actually be m times 1/m². Right? That's how it's going to arise, because we'll have m little squares, each one of size 1/m². Okay. Okay, any questions about that one? Then I just want to give you guys a bunch of examples to try. Okay, so actually, just three examples. So, two, which are familiar ones already. So, two. Let me take f of x to be the characteristic function at 1. So, this will be 1 if x is equal to 1, and 0 otherwise. And 3. Let's look at f of x equals 1 if x is bigger than or equal to 1/2, and 0 otherwise. And 4, again, a characteristic function will take f of x equals 1 if x is rational, and 0 otherwise. Okay, so those are three functions. And for each of those, I would like you just to compute, as written right here, this u of f at with m pieces minus r, I'm sorry, minus l f with m pieces And if it's not immediately clear how to do that, I would start by just doing this one, where m is equal to 3, and just try that one first and make sure that you know how to do that one, and then see if the rest of them just follow from what the work that you did for number 3. Okay, let me just give you a few minutes then to try that. Any questions about what I want you to do? All right, let's see. So let's try these. So let's start with number two here. Okay, let's see, let me try to graph that function. So it's a function that looks zero, except at the end where it's one. Okay, so there's my function. All right, and let's see, I guess if I were to chop it up into little pieces, yeah, that's my R sub M. Okay, let's see, so did anyone figure out what this U minus L is in that case?
We said it was gonna be one over M.
I agree. Okay, so did everyone get that? So we have U of F R minus L of F R should be 1 over M, right? And which interval contributes that 1 over M?
The last one.
Mm-hmm. So did everyone see that? So most of these boxes, the upper and lower is the same. It's just that last box, the U gives me 1 over M and the L just 0, right? So in other words, if I were to write this out, this is going to be this first one here is going to be a 0 plus 0 plus 0, et cetera, out into a 1 over M. And this second one is just going to be all zeros. Any questions about that? Everyone agree with that one? 1 over M? Okay, so then what does the Cauchy criterion give us? If I take the limit as m goes to infinity of 1 over m, that's 0. Okay, so this Cauchy criterion says that if I have a sequence of partitions like here, and the limit of this difference goes to 0, which it does here, then this function is actually integrable. Okay, so this says that this is our criterion. So that is a way of detecting that that function is integrable. Okay, so we get that f of x is Riemann integrable. Okay, any questions about how to use that or what that means? So that's the Cauchy criterion, and then we'll go through the other two examples, but that's what that's doing. Okay, and notice that that's not continuous, right? So there are integrable functions that are not continuous. So I'm going to prove that continuous ones are integrable, but there are more. All right, so that's what we found here. All right, three. What did people get for three?
Should this be 1 over M again?
Mm-hmm. And which box contributes this time?
Should still be on the upper.
Uh-huh, but if I look horizontally, right, I have ordered my boxes, right? So I've got all these boxes, and here I have a whole bunch of little flat boxes and then one tall box, which is tall on one side and on the other. Just like over in this example, I have a whole bunch of boxes, each of which gives me a little square somewhere, right? And over here, I also have a whole bunch of boxes. Again, they're gonna be indexed by the intervals in M. So I have M little boxes. Many of them will just be totally flat, right? Just contributing zero. But one of them is going to be this middle, and it's going to be that middle one. And then the rest are going to be totally flat, but up at the top, right? So that's going to be the picture. So this middle one is the one that's contributing. Okay. So in other words, if I were to write this out, the U is going to give me something that looks like a 0 plus 0 plus 0, etc., for about the first half, and then I'm going to get 1 over M for the second one, and then I'm going to subtract off this L here. And that one's also going to be zeros for a while. But the zero is going to go one further. Okay, and so their difference is going to be that that one over M, which is in the middle. Okay, any questions about that? Did I say more about that example, or is it clear? Okay, and then what is the upshot? Same thing. We're going to get once again that our function is a Riemann integrable. Okay, so it's another function that's Riemann integrable. That jump function. Okay, any more questions about that one? All right, then let's look at the last. So number four here. So this one, of course, is very hard to graph, but it's got all these rational numbers where it's one, and all these irrational numbers where it's zero. Right. So this is what it looks like. And once again, Rm means that we're splitting it up into m equal intervals here. So that's my Rm. This is my function. Okay. So now what did people get for u minus l?
Would it be one?
Mm-hmm. Okay, did everyone get to that? So now in this case, when we look at the intervals, each one of them, the upper one is at the one and the lower one is at zero. So each one of these, the difference contributes that entire vertical rectangle, which has height one and which width one over m, and there are m of them. So the total thing is one. Right, exactly right. So this this case, the u is equal to one over m each time. And L is just zeros. Because when I look in any particular interval here, there are some irrational numbers and some rational numbers. So the maximum is one and the minimum is zero. Okay, so we get zero, so we get one, but the limit is not zero. So we cannot conclude that f is Riemann integrable. Okay, any questions about that criterion, Cauchy criterion? Okay, so then let me try to prove it. Prove the theorem that I stated, 11.28, that continuous functions are all Riemann integrable by using this Cauchy criterion. So a proof of 11.28 using Cauchy criterion. Okay, so is everyone done with that? Maybe I can put the theorem back up. So that's the theorem we're trying to prove, is that all continuous functions are Riemann integrable, okay? And notice that this is a continuous function on a compact set, right? Zero to one, and we're gonna make use of that. So the first thing that one should try to remember is back from chapter seven, if I have a function that's continuous on a compact set, I can say more about it. It's extra nice, right? So it's a particularly nice form of continuous, and does everyone remember what that is? To recall, and this is a theorem 7.42. If we have a function f, which is a continuous on a closed interval 0, 1, then it's better than that. It's something continuous.
Is it uniformly?
Exactly. Okay, so that's right. And let me just remind you of what those two notions are, just so that you, because we're about to use it. So continuous just says that whenever I have an element of the domain, so x here from 0 to 1, and I have an epsilon greater than 0, then I get a delta. And that delta can depend on epsilon and x, both things. And then whenever I have y, whose distance from x is less than delta, then we have that the difference between the values of the function at those two numbers is less than epsilon. That's what it means to be continuous, but uniformly continuous, then remember what changes? For to make that continuity uniform?
Delta doesn't depend on x.
Exactly. We don't have any more dependence on x, so this moves over here, right? So for each epsilon, we get a delta, and then for each x and y, we get the answer. So that's the correct statement. So now we have for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists a delta not depending on x, and whenever I take any old x, and the rest is exactly the same. Okay, so that's the difference. Okay, and so we're going to assume that our function is continuous and therefore uniformly continuous. I'm going to use that. So now we want to show that if f is continuous, then f is in the integrable function, so it's integrable, so the upper and lower bounds are the same. We need, I will consider okay, so I'm going to look at the this criterion here, okay? And so what I want to do is find some partition that I can break my domain up into, so that the difference between the U and the L is less than epsilon. So that's my goal. So I'm going to try to do that, all right? So consider, so let's see. So this says for all epsilon, so let me start that way, for all epsilon greater than zero. Okay, so now I have to choose a P, and let me choose a P. So choose, and I'm going to take it to just be one of these uniform, one of these ones that breaks up into equal pieces. So a piece of epsilon equal to, one of these R's, R sub M, so the bit where they just break up into even bits, so just reminding you, that's a 0, 1 on M, etc. That partition. But I have to tell you which M to choose, okay? So I'm going to take a M to be at least, now the thing that I have is that this function is continuous and therefore uniformly continuous, and therefore I have this statement here, right? So for each epsilon, I can choose a delta, okay? And I'm gonna make m depend on that delta. So the delta tells me how fast my function is moving around, and I want m to be small relative to that. So, I mean, the widths to be small. So one over m to be small relative to that. So I want m to be bigger than or equal to one over this delta associated with my epsilon. Okay, and then I'm just going to compute. So I want to see that this criterion is satisfied. So I would like that this U minus L is less than epsilon, and then I'm done, right? Then I'll be in this right-hand side here and compute. Okay. So how am I going to do that computation? Well, so I have this these intervals here between of length 1 over m. So let me just note that. So compute for r sub m, we have every, so li, that's just the width, right? So that's 1 over m for each of those intervals. Whenever I take 2 points inside of those intervals. So for every pair x and y, both inside of an interval I, okay, what do I know about the difference between them? Well, the interval has width 1 over m, so whichever 2 points I took, they're small, they're closer than that. So we have that the difference between x and y is less than 1 over m, and 1 over m is just my delta. So I have it that it's less than delta. Good. So that is if when I know that the difference here is less than delta, then I'm going to get my conclusion about the difference between the functions. So let me write that down. So let me put it over here. So the difference between f of x and f of y is less than epsilon. Okay, so in particular, if I take my x and yy to be the value where it's biggest and the value where it's smallest, it's still true. So I'm going to take soup over all these x's in ii of f of x. Well, that's some point where I've evaluated it. And then the int, that's some other point where I've evaluated it of f of y. Okay, so I've evaluated it 2 points inside an interval. And for any pair of points inside an interval, I get that that difference is less than epsilon. Okay, so you take 2 points inside an interval. Okay, and so now I can combine it all together. And compute the difference between U and L, which is what we needed here, right over here, the difference between U and L. So combining, we have U F with partition RM minus L of F with partition RM. Okay, so by definition, that's just the sum. So for each of these pieces, for each of these pieces, I have the difference between the soup and the inf. So for all the pieces, so there are m of them, I run from one to m. And then I have the length of the interval, I always, now in this case, they're all the same, one over m, but whatever it is, it's the length. And then I have the value that I get from u, which is gonna be the soup, x in this interval of f of x. And then I subtract off the value that I get from L, because I'm subtracting L. So that's the inf over the y's in I of f of y. Okay, so is that clear? So that's from the definition of U and L. I just kind of combined them. Okay, and so then we're almost done. So then, and so then this is less than. Okay, let's see. So there are M terms. Okay, that's number of terms. And each one, the length is 1 over m. Okay. And then the difference between the soup and the inf for each one is at most, is actually strictly less than epsilon. So this is times epsilon, and we're done. Okay, so we have found that we have for every epsilon, we've found a partition. So the difference between the U and the L for that partition is less than that epsilon. That means that the U and the L must be the same. And we're in the integrable functions. Therefore, F is in R integrable. Okay, any questions about that proof? So that's a good example of how you go about using this Cauchy criterion to get facts. Okay, let me do one more example then of doing this. This one turns out to be remarkably clean, which is a little bit of a trick. So we have already seen, so now we've just proven that every continuous function is integrable. And we just did a couple of examples a minute ago here, where we found some functions that were not continuous, that were also integrable. So we certainly haven't, so these two were both integrable and they're not continuous. So there's certainly more, all right? And here's another collection of functions that are, so and that'll include these two. Okay, so I want something that at least includes those. And also, as I said, it's just kind of another fun example, which is easy to use this criterion for. So let me do that. So that is theorem. So I'm going to keep the Cauchy criterion invisible because we're going to use it again. All right. So this is theorem 11.30. And it says that all increasing functions are Riemann integrable. So if f, some bounded function on 0, 1, is increasing, then f is Riemann integrable. Okay, and once again, I would like to use a one of these Cauchy criteria. So I want to use, I guess I'm going to use the last of the Cauchy criteria. So this one here. Cauchy criterion. Okay, and the trick is the following. Let me just draw a little picture because I think it clarifies the trick here. So we're going to take, we have our function and it's increasing. It can be kind of complicated. It can jump, but it's increasing, all right? This is my function f. And now I'm going to chop it up into pieces. And those pieces are all going to be of the same width. Okay, because I'm going to use one of those. And the difference between the top and the bottom. Oops. Is going to create these rectangles here. Okay. All right. And so actually, can anyone see from that picture what the area of all of these is? So these are 1/m. So each rectangle is 1/m wide. And this top is, this is f of 1 up here, and this is f of 0 down here. Can anyone see from that picture what the sum of the areas of those little rectangles are, even without knowing what the area of each one is?
Would it be 1/m?
Yes, it is 1/m. And how did you see that? There's a trick to see that.
All of the, so it's like a sum of all the areas where each area is like 1/m times something. And then if you just factor out all the 1/m's, it's like 1/m times something plus something plus something. And it adds up to 1 because we're going from, it adds up to f of 1, sorry.
That's right. That's exactly the right answer. Yeah. So it adds up to f of 1. That's right. So f of 1/m. That's actually f of 1 minus f of 0/m. My f of 0 happened to be 0. So yeah. That's right. And another way that I like to think about what you just said is if I just slide all these boxes over, then I end up with this column here, and it's got the same area, okay? And it's 1/m on the bottom here, and it's the difference between f of 1 and f of 0 on the side. And so I just want to turn that into a formula, but that's the idea, that's the argument. Okay, so I'm going to use this second criterion here. All right, and okay. All right, so I'm consider, and I'm just going to compute u of f with rm, the same rm as before, and subtract l of f with this rm. So just like the picture. And I just want to basically write out in formulas what we just said in words. So this is going to be the by definition, this is the sum. I runs from 1 to m, and they each have Lis happen to be the same, but it's whatever the width is, Li. And then we're going to take the max and the min. And now the fact that it's increasing here, that simplifies this. Let me just write it out. So precisely, this is the sup over x in between x I minus 1 and x I. Maybe I'll write it this way, sorry. Tiny there, sorry. Okay, so it's actually, I guess, I minus 1/m and I over m of f of x minus the nth over the same thing. Okay, so I'm just copying the beginning, I equals 1 to m li. But where, since this is an increasing function, at which value does it take its maximum?
x of I.
Yeah, exactly. It's over on the right-hand side, right? The maximum is always at the right, and the minimum is always at the left, right? So this is just going to be a x f of x sub I, which in this case is I over m. And the left-hand side, the smallest one, is going to be f of I minus 1 over m, x sub I minus 1, right? Okay, any questions about that? And so this is because my function is increasing. All right, so that's what we made use of the fact that it's increasing. If it were going up and down, then it would be more complicated. Okay, great. And so, but now we get the this sliding over picture turns into a telescoping series. So this is, let's see, the L over I's are all the same. So this is a 1 over M. And then if I write out my sum, I have F of 1 minus F of M minus 1 over M, but then plus F of M minus 1 over M, and minus f of m minus 2 over m. And then they just keep canceling until I get to f of 0 at the end, and everything else cancels. And so I get 1 over m times exactly what you noted, the difference between f of 1 and f of 0. And it's that telescoping that corresponds to the sliding over of the boxes so that they line up nicely. OK, any questions about that? Just writing out what I said here. The other terms cancel. Okay.
Can we say something similar about decreasing?
Yes, we can, and that's also true. So, corollary, if f is decreasing, then it's also true. Okay, and actually what we'll find is that we found a couple ways to build functions, and they're kind of different looking, and we'll find a few more things we can do that'll enable us to build a kind of a mishmash of functions. So we can build these increasing ones, we can build anything that's continuous, we can build the decreasing ones. It turns out that we can take two functions and stick them together end to end, and it's still going to be integrable. And the space of integrable functions is going to be linear, so we can add them. And so there are lots of things that we can do that'll enable us to build somewhat more complicated looking functions. And it's a little bit hard to get a good handle on it, although Lebesgue turns out to have written a nice criterion for exactly which ones are remanipulable. And so we'll come to that later. But for now, we're going to just make use of the fact that for quite a few functions, at least, we can prove that they are integrable. And so that's... most of what we're going to do for the time being, whereas as opposed to making use of the if and only if criterion, is actually kind of painful to use, but it does exist. Okay, we're out of time, so I'll turn off the recording and stick around.